The Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy.
Hello and welcome to The Nat Coombs Show with Paddy Power Fantasy. Good to have you with us. Delighted to be in our brand new home here at ESPN as we roll into the new season, kicking off imminently. And that is what this show is about. Coming to you four times a week. Mondays, looking back at all the weekend's action. Wednesdays, I'm Mike Carlson and Ben Isaacs, deep diving into all the big NFL stories. Friday, we'll get you set for the weekend. And we've got a bonus fantasy show dropping on Saturday mornings. Lots of your old friends. I mentioned Carlson and Isaacs, Bandini. We're going to have Jason Bell as part of the team this season. Greg Brady, Rosenthal will be dropping by as well. So lots of your old favorites helping me make sense of this fantastic game. Big shout out to our brand new sponsors as well, Paddy Power Fantasy, the new NFL fantasy game that lets you play a new season every game day. If you search Paddy Power Fantasy to play, get involved with that one. We're going to be doing a lot of fantasy chat, daily fantasy chat as well, with our new friends supporting us. One other thing as well, social media, at the NC Show, at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you know the drill by now. Get involved with that. Lots of great stuff rolling out all week long. Good chats going on there, bonus video content, you name it, it is there. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the show, iTunes, all the usual podcatchers, Spotify, Google, you'll find us there. Great to have you with us. Let's get the show on the road. I'm Mike Carlson, up first. So for my first guest on this season's show, ESPN asked me who I would like as a leadoff. There was only one man for the job. One man I said, I want to be the very first guest on this season's show. But Stone Cold Steve Austin was busy, so we've got the next best thing. Iron Mike Carlson, how you doing?
Boy, Ray Charles could see that one building up. Yeah, hey. Well, I mean, it's the 100th anniversary of the NFL this season, so who else but someone who was around at the start?
Well, rightly so. The deep dive of Iron Mike, who'll be with us each and every Wednesday throughout the season, going old school. But you know what? Andrew Luck might have had enough, but you are never going to hang him up, are you, Mike?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, as someone who remembers a little Andy throwing footballs on the sidelines of London Monarchs games, I definitely feel for Andrew Luck. You know,
yeah.
He's come a long way since then. And I can't understand fans booing him for making, you know, what was obviously a difficult but necessary decision for himself.
Well, it really was. And he's obviously been, I think, one of those players very clearly from the outset of his career that's thoughtful, a measured, intelligent guy, and he's made the best decision for him. And it's extraordinary the vitriol he was getting. Part of it was kind of instantaneous, maybe without the full story coming out. And in retrospect, I guess a lot of the Colts fans will have maybe revised, the ones that boo will have revised their opinion there. But let's lead off with that, because it's one of the big stories of the offseason, of course. Andrew Luck's retirement just a week or so back, so right on the eve of the Colts season. So they've had to move swiftly and quickly in that position. They had Jacoby Brissett, the former Patriot, as a backup on a pretty decent deal as well. Now, his agents played an absolute blinder, Mike, because they've re-upped the deal, $30 million over 2 years, which means Brissett is now amongst one of the better paid quarterbacks in the NFL. They had, I guess, in many respects, no option but to do that kind of deal. But what is this change at the quarterback position going to do to the Colts season?
Well, I mean, Brissett's actually quite reasonable now for 2 years. And that's a good thing from both their points of view. I think it gives him a chance to settle in without worrying that, you know, it's going to be a one and done sort of deal. And what it changes is, well, he's not Andrew Luck. And the biggest difference between them is that Luck sees things happening a lot more clearly and, can make things happen, while he's on the move. Jacoby's kind of more of a see it and then throw kind of quarterback. And he's got a slower release, which means, you know, you need to protect him and give him time to make those decisions. But last year, he got to sit and watch, and that probably helped him because the year before he was under a lot of pressure, obviously. He's more experienced. He certainly got potential. We saw that when he played and in the couple of games he played in New England where they definitely tried to protect him. I don't think they'll have to do that. Their offensive line was much better last year. You know, and Luck had been sacked quite a bit in previous years.
Yeah, they sorted that out.
yeah, they hadn't paid much attention to the offensive line, but it's a better line. If Marlon Mack stays healthy, they can have a good running game. And of course, they signed Brian Hoyer when the Patriots let him go. Mm. So the Patriots, like a lot of teams in the league now, are going with a veteran and an inexperienced backup, you know, either a rookie or someone who's been hanging around practice squads and the bench for a year. And there was lots of criticism of Hoyer online when they signed him, and they gave him a good contract for a backup as well. But he's exactly what teams used to always want in a backup, a veteran who's not necessarily going to win games for you, but is not going to go out and lose them for you.
Sure, and have a run of three or four and handle himself, but maybe not carry the whole season on his back. Let's pivot to the Patriots then. So the Colts not completely out of it is what you're saying. And of course, Frank Reich being Brissett's head coach knows how to handle a quarterback.
Absolutely. And in that division, they're certainly not out of it, because I'm sure we'll talk about Houston in a minute or two.
Flexing Houston Texans. Let's get into them in a bit. I want to stay on the Patriots for a moment, though, because interesting offseason for them as well. They're in the AFC East, which is pretty clearly, once again, the most straightforward division to win, I think, in the NFL. They're not going to get a huge amount of trouble. Buffalo, they could be one of those sleeper teams, I guess. Jets, maybe, but they're on the kind of 8-8, 9-7 bubble. So the Patriots should roll into the playoffs, at least you would think, with a bye, looking at their schedule and the AFC East. What have they done in the offseason, Mike, that, in terms of whether you think they can contend again for a deep run in the playoffs and maybe another Super Bowl appearance?
Well, that's the big question, because losing Gronk, and you know, we talk about Andrew Luck, but nobody's really talking about Gronk, who is in the sort of same boat at roughly the same age. And, you know, back in the days when Jim Brown retired, Jim Brown walked out on the Browns because Art Modell gave him an ultimatum to show up for preseason and stop filming. And he was making the Dirty Dozen. And Jim Brown wasn't making enough money to,
It's holding down a job in the offseason.
Yeah. So why not be an actor? Barry Sanders retired at the same age as Andrew Luck. I think nowadays you'll see that more when it just becomes too difficult for players to continue. And physically, anyone who watched could see that Gronk was struggling all last season.
There's a lot of buzz, Mike, that he might come back. Is that just wishful thinking?
I think so. Everybody looks at Gronk's personality and thinks he's going to want to play. But as I look at it, if the Patriots are doing well, at the halfway point of the season, they don't need him to come back. So there won't be that. And if they're not doing well, does he really want to come back in what's going to be a sort of, you know, difficult second half of the season? Now, I suspect they will do well because they're the Patriots. Like you said, one of the reasons they can dominate that division is that they know the team so well. When you think about how they win by game planning, when they know a team inside out after, you know, playing them twice a year, every year, that becomes relatively easy. Now, Miami will be different because they've got a new coach and he's one of the expatriates in Brian Flores, but they're not going to be very strong because they're obviously in rebuilding mode. Get rid of the expensive old wood and be in a position to build a better team in the way that Brian Flores wants to do it. But
Patriots made a lot of moves at late doors on the offensive line. Jermaine Illuminor, the Brit, of course.
That was forced upon them because of David Andrews coming up with an embolism, which puts him on the IR for a year. Remember, Isaiah Wynn's the starting left tackle. He missed the whole of his rookie season through injury. So they signed Illuminor. They signed Corey Cunningham. They signed Russell Bodine. They traded for all three of those guys, low draft picks. A fourth for Illuminor. And when they see potential in a guy, they think Dante Scarnecchia can coach him up into being the kind of player for their line. And the thing with Jermaine, and I'm one of the Illuminati, you know, his fan club. Jermaine's a big, huge guy, and everybody looks at him and thinks this is a power blocker, which is what the Ravens want in their offense. But the Patriots' offensive line is more of a finesse blocking line, and I think that's where you're going to find that Illuminor can be really good. Corey Cunningham certainly is. Bodine is a veteran center who could wind up starting really quickly if Karras isn't strong enough to hold off some of the big interior linemen they're going to be facing in that division.
Ah, the waiting game. Waiting for Boris to sort out Brexit. Waiting for Tom Brady to retire. Waiting for the Browns to get to a Super Bowl. It's one big Boris Brexit Brady Browns hold-up. But you shouldn't have to wait all season to win with your fantasy NFL team. So, we've launched Paddy Power Fantasy. Our seasons only last as long as a game week, or even a day. So, you pick your team, watch the games, and most importantly, you don't have to wait to win big cash prizes. Search Paddy Power Fantasy to play today. Paddy Power. Enough of the nonsense. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
So, you know, a lot of veteran moves. N'Keal Harry is on IR for the first part of the season. What they were looking for.
He was the receiver they drafted, of course.
Exactly. First round receiver for the Patriots in the Belichick area. They're looking for mismatches to replace Gronk. They're not going to replace him with a tight end person for person because you can't. So what they're looking for are other mismatches they can take advantage of. So Josh Gordon's back. Demaryius Thomas, they signed, and he looked actually really good in the last exhibition game. So they'll try to rely on wide receiver mismatches, until they can figure something out. And I think also backs out of the backfield. A lot of talk about Sony Michel joining James White as a receiving back this year. And, of course, they're very deep at running back. So if that offensive line holds up, they should be good.
Brady last season, look, he's got, turned 42 this summer, right? And every year, inevitably, the stories come out, is it Brady's last year, yada, yada, yada. But there was a different type of play from him last season. And the parallels were made, I think, with looking at other sports with Ronaldo in football and how he's been used differently latterly in his career. LeBron to some degree as well in terms of spelling him and giving him time away in terms of duration. It's not exactly the same, of course, with Brady, but the Patriots are using him differently. They are acknowledging the fact that he is getting older.
Well, to an extent, but I mean, he still needs to make the throws. But Brady's biggest strength, of course, is knowing where the ball's going to go, recognizing what the defense is going to be giving them, and then going the right way. And that's what they really need him to do. And anyway, you know what I call Tom Brady?
Tell me.
Kid. He's still a youngster as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, they'll look at that receiving core and think that they can create mismatches. Brady can recognize where they're going to be. Philip Dorsett, deep threat. Thomas can get behind a guy even at his advancing age. I think that's going to be sort of a non-issue for them. The bigger issue really will be if their defense, can cover what is going to be a lot of big, good receivers that they face. We'll see a lot of that in the first week's game against Pittsburgh. And here is where, bringing back Jamie Collins might help. Collins, when he was with the Patriots, had the talent to cover receivers and backs out of the backfield, but often didn't pay attention to what he should be doing, which is why they let him go.
Infuriates Belichick, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If he's back and if he's in that kind of read and do the right thing mode, then that's exactly the kind of linebacker they've been needing for a couple of years, a guy who can provide coverage. They're very deep in the defensive backfield. They let a couple of pretty good young defensive backs go. And watch, too, my favorite guy in preseason, Gunnar Olszewski, a defensive back from Bemidji State, who they've moved to receiver and punt returner, a slot type guy. And he's the first Olszewski in the NFL since Johnny Olszewski, who wore number zero for the Redskins back
allowed
in the
to
50s.
Wear number zero? When did that get outlawed?
He was ahead of Jim Otto in that category. But yeah, Johnny Olszewski was one of my favorite players. He was a fullback. And so Gunnar Olszewski already has Carlson points.
Oh, done deal. Did you have a Johnny Olszewski poster on your wall, Iron Mike Carlson?
Yeah, I probably had his football
high school
card.
Mike. Yeah, okay. The team that the Patriots beat in the Super Bowl, the LA Rams, of course, another team expected to be there or thereabouts. Jared Goff, breaking news, or the latest news as far as Goff is concerned, he's re-upped as well. $134 million deal that he signed, a four-year contract extension, Mike. $110 million of that guaranteed. He put up elite numbers last season. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, took a bath in the Super Bowl, of course, but his season was really strong. Yet people don't seem to have him yet in that elite young bracket that other of his contemporaries are. Why do you think that is? Is it because he's so reliant on Sean McVay?
Yes, simple reason. They look at him as being a drone quarterback that Sean McVay is pulling the stick on. And I think under pressure, he was shown up a little bit in the Super Bowl. On the other hand, it was a couple of great individual plays by the Patriots that stopped them, you know, from putting a score on the board. Yeah. And at the point, at any point in that game, one score could have been absolutely crucial for them. So I think with Cooper Kupp coming back, his job is going to be a lot easier. And people forget that. And they also forget that I don't think Sean McVay adjusted to what the Patriots were doing very well. Because, you know, I was saying during the game, they should be going with two tight ends, and they've got receiving tight ends who could put pressure on the Patriots that way, because the Patriots were kind of clogging up the middle to stop some of these, mesh patterns that they run. And I think they could have had some success with doing things like that, but they didn't try it. And I think the other interesting thing about the Rams is that they let Ndamukong Suh go, a sort of addition by subtraction, as a number of teams, including the Steelers, have done. And they had a pretty good defensive draft in the secondary, especially, and signed Eric Weddle. And everything that people are saying about Eric Weddle coming out of LA was that, you know, he's like Wade Phillips's, he's sort of the equivalent, except that he doesn't need the stick. He knows what Wade Phillips wants to do in that defense. So he's moving everybody around. He's keeping them on page. And I think you'll see an awful lot of him and the rookie Taylor Rapp. In kind of big nickel packages, which will create some problems, I think, for other teams. And, you know, if you give Wade Phillips the pieces, Wade Phillips is an exceptionally good defensive coordinator.
Just on the offensive side, a quick one on Todd Gurley, who a lot of buzz about him having arthritis, certainly deep-seated injury concerns. How much of their season and ultimate success this year, Mike, depends on Gurley's fitness?
It's an interesting thing because running backs are a big issue around the league right now for obvious reasons. And Gurley is sort of the prototype of the running receiving back, you know, and which you can take back to Marshall Faulk with the Rams, back in the Greatest Show on Turf. If he's not 100%, they're going to have a problem, and the problem will become evident as the season goes on, because if he does have something like arthritis, it's going to get worse as the season goes on. You can only get so many shots to lighten the pain of arthritis and to provide mobility in the joint that has it. Now, Daryl Henderson, who they drafted, you know, could help them with that kind of receiving and big play sort of ability, which Malcolm Brown, the backup, doesn't have quite so much of. But they, you know, it's interesting that they had enough faith in Gurley to let CJ Anderson go.
Sure.
And then draft a rookie to replace him, as it were. But, you know, it's weird because modern football, smarts says that running backs are fungible, basically, that, you know, you don't need to pay big money to a Zeke Elliott or whatever, or any running back. And that's true, and it's not. And when you had Todd Gurley at 100%, then you had a rare kind of combination of ingredients that made him potentially worth, you know, that kind of exceptional money.
But, and this is exactly the point with
too many guys who are.
Well, Saquon Barkley at the Giants is one of them. Zeke is another. And again, another of the major stories that's dominated the offseason, Mike, is the Texas standoff between Zeke Elliott and Jerry Jones. And it's fascinating because I get certainly what you're saying, that there is this prevailing mindset now that running backs, partly if you look at the statistics, actually, there was a good piece in Gridiron by Tom Clingsbury about how many teams using running backs by committee now, and very few obviously have a bell cow back. So that's, I guess, accentuated the devaluation of running backs. But you look at Zeke Elliott in particular, and when everybody has been chatting away all the talking heads over the summer about should he be paid the money he wants? Are they going to capitulate the Cowboys? How important is he to the offense? Are running backs replaceable? The common and the consensus opinion seems to be Zeke Elliott elevates the Cowboys offense in a way that a good running back wouldn't, and to a degree that will propel them into certainly playoff contention and maybe further. The same argument was used with Amari Cooper, you remember, when they signed him last year. They've overpaid for him, but actually the impact he had on that offense was apparent. And so it was worth overpaying. Isn't it worth overpaying for Zeke Elliott, even if the market is saying one thing, because he's clearly going to have a significant impact on their offense this season, and his absence is going to be really felt by Dallas?
Yeah, the problem with Zeke in particular, and with Dallas in particular, is that they've got a few guys who need to be paid. Mm. And you know, you said they paid for Cooper. There's DeMarcus Lawrence, Dak Prescott now wants big money. So the question is where that money comes from. The second thing with any running back is that running backs are fungible in part because it's such an injury prevalent position.
Sure.
And you can't count on a running back to give you years and years of production. There's no crystal ball that says whether they will or not. If I were Jerry Jones, and you know, thank heavens I'm not. What I would do would be to offer Zeke a long-term deal that's heavily front-loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Heavily backloaded.
Backloaded, yeah.
But with the, you know, with a good signing bonus, i.e. a good guarantee.
So he gets a chunk of change up front, but if he lasts the course, then he gets paid. And if he doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, that could be spun by both of them as a success.
A win-win.
But, you know, he's obviously looking at Le'Veon Bell taking a year off and getting a big deal, although not as much money as he might have gotten otherwise from the Jets. And you could argue, if you're a running back, that taking a year off, if you're still healthy after 3 or 4 years,
isn't such a bad idea.
Yeah. And you come back refreshed and ready to go. So, you know, it's not like any of these guys are hurting for money unless they've invested badly or their agent has invested badly for them. I think that's a good question. And I'm waiting for the day when somebody like Zeke and somebody like Dak decide to do what in baseball was done in the 60s, first by Don Drysdale and Sandy Koufax, holding out together.
Tell us more about
both
that.
Of us.
What
or happened? You signed neither
did
of
they?
Us.
So they tag teamed. Brilliant. And how did that end up?
Yeah. How did it end up? They got a better deal, but not as much as they actually wanted, because in those days there wasn't the free agency option that there is nowadays.
And how will it end up with Zeke, do you think? Can we really see him playing this season?
I think Zeke will come back, but maybe not for a while. He may be waiting to see if Tony Pollard can actually carry the team the way Zeke does, and I doubt that Tony Pollard can, which is no criticism of him, but you know, he was pretty much drafted, I think, to be Zeke's change of pace back.
Right.
You know, not a guy who's going to get 25 or more carries every game.
Okay. Well, Zeke was, and the Zeke Jerry show was certainly one of the big attractions of the offseason. So was Antonio Brown regularly and again, underpinned and amplified, I should say, by Hard Knocks and the Raiders featuring in Hard Knocks. Knock on wood. Can you hear me, Mike?
I can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Brown. So
hey, I love you guys. You know, John Gruden is the Boris Johnson of the NFL. It's like he'll say what the cameras want, whether it makes sense or not. You know, he was
aware of the cameras, isn't he? I mean, it's unpredictable enough because he spent so much time in broadcasting, but you could just see that little side eye awareness. It was a little bit like, you know, Gervais, David Brent in The Office, like really looking down the barrel at the camera. I'm so aware the camera is here. Hard Knocks is always entertaining, and it's always, when you're watching it, you think, why on earth did the organization agree to this? Because you can refuse, right? It's not as if it's thrust upon you.
I assume you can. I'm not convinced the commissioner can send a couple of pebbies over.
You know who I'd love to see on Hard Knocks, Mike?
I can guess. Bill Belichick.
Yes, Bill Belichick.
How did I know?
I don't know. We worked together too long.
It wouldn't be as bad as people think. Bill wouldn't be sitting there saying we're going to do what's best for the team over and over again. Because if you watch some of the video that's available of the Patriots at practice and stuff, his public persona is not what you get if you're a player on the team.
Right.
And, it's almost the inverse of John Gruden.
Absolutely. Because, and I'm sure this isn't unique to Gruden, but there were quite a lot of exchanges between Gruden and various players where he was trying to be one of the guys, trying to have a bit of banter with them. And it was just painfully awkward. Yes. You could see them just desperately trying to get out of shot.
Yeah, one of the guys who I, before, you know, after the draft, when he was signed undrafted, I thought Keelan Doss was a great pickup for Oakland.
Yeah.
And there's Gruden pushing him. And I was thinking to myself, well, you know, I was pretty much right. And then, of course, they cut him.
Yes.
And, Jacksonville signed him, which I thought was a really good move for Jacksonville. And I think he'll be up off the practice squad sooner rather than later. The Jags also signed Divine Ozigbo when the Saints cut him. And that's another good move for them because, you know, there's a team that thought they had a Zeke Elliott kind of running back in Leonard Fournette. And they obviously need change of paces for him. And I think Ozigbo could do just that. But going back, to Oakland.
We had his foot burns from his cryogenic freezing in Paris, which is probably the most surreal story I've ever seen associated with the NFL. Then you had his helmet issue. I've got a bit more sympathy with him for that. So he's worn the same helmet for years and years.
I'm rooting for him because when do you get the chance to call a guy a literal head case? Right? It's like, give it to me, Antonio. You know, I want more of this stuff.
I think it's unfair the criticism he's getting for this. So if listeners, you haven't seen that story, he is not allowed to wear the helmet he's been wearing for years and years because of regulations in the NFL, which is fair enough. But he's unhappy about it. He's trying to find a similar, he's calling out for a similar helmet. And people are saying, you're a prima donna, just wear any helmet. That's underestimating the connection and the comfort that you need, a player needs with his helmet, right, Mike?
Absolutely so. I mean, when I was young and playing in college and all the helmets were suspension, I used to get what I would now recognize as being concussions all the time. I saw stars. And then when the new padded helmets that you puffed up with air inside, it fit my head all of a sudden, and I stopped getting that. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I think the NFL should consider some of this stuff case by case, although you might have lots of guys complaining. I mean, Tom Brady, for example, wore his old helmet last year when you still had the option to do that.
Yes.
And it is a comfort thing. It is a kind of not wanting to change unless you have to change. And I know that the newer helmets are better in the sense, and they're being designed to sort of help the concussion issue as much as possible. But I'm not going crazy on Antonio Brown for this. And I think he was a great pickup for Oakland.
He's going to have a big year, I think. Despite all the razzmatazz, I think he's going to post 1,200.
But, what you get is what you see is what you get.
Yeah, what do you expect?
Wide receivers, cornerbacks are the prima donnas of the NFL because they're out on an island performing one-on-one. And of all the prima donnas, Antonio Brown is certainly a top three in the wide receiver department.
Speaking of great cornerbacks out on an island, Jalen Ramsey was in town over the summer, and I did a sit down with him. He was a terrific interview, Mike, and we're going to drop some of that through over the next couple of weeks, I think, on the show. I asked him for his Mount Rushmore of cornerbacks, and we built one. So that we might start throwing questions like that at you, Mike, over the season. And
that's very cool. Yeah, and, of course, he's a great player, obviously.
He's a terrific player and a smart guy to boot. I was just thinking on that. Maybe we should reboot Ask Mike, the good old days of Ask Mike. Maybe that's something we could drop into our Wednesday episodes as well. We'll take that under consideration, big man, and perhaps wheel that out throughout the course of the year. So the Texans, I want to go next. We talked about them near the top. Props to Tom, part of our production team, gave a cracking definition of the Houston Texans flexing. That's exactly what they're doing. Laramie Tunsil, who had a pretty conspicuous entry into the NFL, of course, back around draft time. Look it up, kids, if you haven't seen that one.
I never get tired of looking at that picture.
Yeah, but he obviously worked out very well in Miami, so that was a bit of a shock, sending Tunsil to strengthen the Texans line. Kenny Stills as well, a very dependable performer over the years. That's not all they've done, of course, adding Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde at the running back position as well. They've got a heavyweight receiving core there. So the Texans looked good last season, re-upped again this year. They're for real, aren't they?
Well, you have to think so, although the chaos there is kind of amazing. And remember, they had to let Jadeveon Clowney go, who wound up in Seattle. And they got a reasonable but not great haul for him, including two linebackers in Barkevious Mingo and Jacob Martin, who might be able to take some snaps that he would have. But
has Clowney lived up to his potential, Mike, though? Do you think so far as in his
NFL that was
career?
The thing with Clowney. The problem was twofold. One, he hasn't produced the way that a guy with his talent should in terms of sack numbers or stuff like that. And two, they've already got JJ Watt. Mm. And what they are looking to say to him is, look, you're not JJ Watt. And even if you were, we can't pay two JJ Watts.
Right.
So that was the problem. And of course, it was exacerbated by Houston firing their general manager, Brian Gain, after the draft. And then Bill O'Brien, sort of joining a committee of guys who are running the team, which includes an expatriate guy called Jack Easterby, who was the morale coach on the Patriots and is called ex-VP of team development at Houston. So the question's like, who's
Back track, the morale coach?
He was the morale coach, or the character coach. Character coach, they called him.
What do they do?
Well, it was kind of like being a team chaplain, but, you know, it was available to the players to go through the personal kind of stuff that, that obviously Bill doesn't do. And,
sure.
You know, and he left because of Robert Kraft's, massage scandal, saying that, you know, he couldn't stay at the Patriots because of that. And remember too, Houston tried to sign Nick Caserio to be the general manager away from New England when he was still under contract. So they had their hands slapped over that. But what they've done now, is to acquire talent at the position they needed most, which is left tackle, because they couldn't take care of Dwayne Brown when he became a free agent and went to Seattle. And part of the reason was, and this is true of a lot of the Patriots coaches who have left New England, they understand the concepts of where your spending has to be in terms of value, but they don't understand how to make that work with the players. Whereas in New England, everybody understands, and Bill's upfront and straight with everybody about this, that this is a job and a business, and it's not like college where it's all rah-rah. And, you know, and in the NFL, players, some players do understand that loyalty works one way. But if you know what the situation is, you can accept that. And I think that's always been part of why the Patriots, you know, can get rid of guys without ill feeling when it comes time, you know, when they come time to get more money than they think they're worth. Well, Bill O'Brien, I think, went to Houston and thought, well, we can't, Dwayne Brown, that's more money than he's worth, but a left tackle is worth that kind of money if you handle it correctly. And you know, now Seattle's got Clowney as well as a result of that. They had bad drafts trying to, you know, fill that left tackle position. Julian Davenport, one of those guys who just needed development and was drafted far too early. He's gone to Miami now along with a big haul of draft picks that made the trade sort of impossible for Miami to resist. And I think that Houston's going to have to prove that this offense can function with Lamar Miller out, Donta Foreman cut. Duke Johnson, as you said, becomes the new running back. He's never been a number one. And so they basically traded to Kansas City for Carlos Hyde. And Carlos Hyde hasn't shown much in the last couple of years. You know, maybe he can recapture some of his youth, but it's interesting that Kansas City then immediately signed LeSean McCoy.
Speaking of running backs that haven't shown much over the last couple of years, but
exactly. So they obviously thought McCoy's a better bet than Carlos Hyde.
Right. So, two or three more for you, Mike. I want to ask you about Kyler Murray, actually, because again, huge amount of attention is going to be on him. The number one overall draft pick going to, the Cardinals, who, by all accounts, going to struggle once again, and they struggled to protect Josh Rosen last year, who they, of course, jettisoned to get Kyler Murray on board. He's an explosive player in college. He's going to be absolute must watch, but he's diminutive by NFL standards, even by NFL quarterbacking, the smaller quarterbacking standards, the Drew Breeses and Russell Wilsons. He's definitely at the pretty much the lowest end of the range there. And there is a concern about his jump up to the NFL, not whether he can necessarily handle the pace or the speed or even the game, but whether he can handle the physicality of it. And if he gets knocked a few times, is he one of those players a little bit like RG3 was 5-6 years ago that might take a hit and might not be able to come back from it?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to put him in a position to run the ball as much as RG3 did his rookie year. You know, and I'm always interested to see if he could, you know, like move into that Baltimore offense again, how much he's actually got left after that injury. Cliff Kingsbury, the new coach, obviously fell in love with Murray while he was coaching at Texas Tech and Murray was playing at Oklahoma and had to have him, which is why they let Josh Rosen go for not very much return. But as you said right at the beginning, the real problem there is the offensive line. And, you know, they needed to improve on both sides of the ball. So it made it hard to sort of upgrade the offensive line massively. But I think this line is going to find it very difficult to protect Kyler Murray and do the kind of stuff that Kingsbury wants to do, partly because it's going to be difficult for Kingsbury to do a lot of those things. You know, you can't simply win in the NFL by spreading things out and running mesh patterns, because some of the defenders are just too good to do that. He's helped out a lot on the receiving side by adding players. They had a good draft, I thought, defensively, which where they needed help as well. But that offensive line is still the key. And you're absolutely right. Kyler Murray looks small. Mm. I mean, you know, I remember when Doug Flutie came into the NFL and he had some problems. But he had, what would you call it? He had a kind of more limited mobility that got him into the more standard NFL pass patterns at the time. Now, if Clint Kingsbury's offense can provide those kind of opportunities for Murray, he might work out.
What's his arm like, Mike?
But I think
what's Murray's arm like?
His arm is strong. It's very, very strong. That's not going to be the problem. The problem is going to be getting him the time to get those deep patterns, which is a question of both protection and identification. He's got to see where those mismatches are going to be and where the guy that he's going to have to look for is. And then he's going to have to check down. And in preseason, it seemed to me that check downs were the problem, because he was having trouble identifying secondary receivers, and a slow kind of process of moving from the second to the third option. That will come with time, obviously, but the question is whether, his line is going to give him that time to do it. And I think Arizona is going to be in for a really tough season.
One more for you, Mike. We'll stay on the quarterback tip and Cam Newton, because that's been another substantial story, I think, in the offseason. The Carolina Panthers quarterback, of course, who is blows hot and cold, goes from an MVP level season to not, and is a colorful character off the field, no doubt about that. But there's a lot of concern surrounding his shoulder, and he's had two surgeries in 2 years. And some rumblings suggest that he's not in good shape at all. And as a result, the Panther season could become derailed as a result. What do you think is going to happen there? How will that play out?
Well, you know, Cam is basically the same age as Andrew Luck. And when I wrote a preview of the season, my preview for Carolina, I could have left it at two words, Cam's shoulder, which was the lead and the key in the end. He was obviously limited last year. Second half of the season, he just couldn't throw the ball, and you can't get by with a quarterback who can't throw the ball. I think that if it's the shoulder, it's always going to be a problem. It's very hard to come back without a lot of rest, and that's always going to be a difficulty for him. He certainly gave, you know, how much more could you ask for a quarterback to give than what he gave last year, trying to keep that team in contention. And right. If he is healthy, if the shoulder is 100%, that is a good football team that's going to be contending in a fairly difficult division, this season. But I kind of have my doubts about that. And with any other quarterback, it becomes a much less good, with any other quarterback on their roster, it becomes a much less good football team. Defensively, they're going to be tough, but they're going to have problems. You could sort of say, well, turn him into a Josh Allen, because oddly enough, Buffalo is almost a carbon copy of Carolina. They were really good defensively last year. Josh Allen turned out to be a better runner than anybody had suspected. Right. And he's got a powerful arm, which they're trying to harness better this season, which is why I think Buffalo is one of those dark horse teams that you need to keep an eye on.
I'm glad you said that, because my first column for ESPN this season, name check Buffalo as a sneaky good team. So I've got the Iron Mike seal of approval.
There we
for
are.
That,
yeah. I think we're on the same boat with that one. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see them grab a wild card out of that division. And I think they're going to be a tough matchup for the Patriots as well.
Hey, Mike, do you know my other team that I said is not going to be as bad as some people are suggesting? Now, I might be completely off my rocker with this one. I don't think the Giants are going to tank as much as some people are thinking. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, be careful what words you use, because everybody's throwing tank around right now. And tank to me means
you deliberately try
to lose games.
Okay, all right. But I was using it more in the sense of they're going to fall to the bottom of the tank.
I understand that. I don't agree with you there. I think the Giants are going to have a certain amount of problems.
And,
you know, the one thing I do agree with is that what they need to do right now is to start Eli at the start of the season.
Yeah, definitely.
Because when you have a quarterback controversy, especially with a young quarterback who hasn't really played, what you need to do and what makes sense to do is to play your veteran and let him play himself out of the job.
Yes.
If he doesn't, if he plays really well and you're winning, that's a win. If he does, then you can put your quarterback of the future in and say, okay, now we're riding with this guy. Now he may not win for you immediately because that's a big task for any rookie quarterback, in the NFL, unless you're like Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers protect you and they run the ball 40 times a game and only ask you to throw 20 passes.
The Giants owe that as well to Eli. And I know you can argue there's no room for sentiment, but in a season where they're quite clearly, barring something extraordinary happening, not going to make the playoffs, I kind of think they, for the two rings and everything else, that they owe it to Eli to at least give him a chance, as you say, to play himself out of a job as opposed to benching him.
You know, in a completely objective world, I think you can argue he's played himself out of the job over the last couple of seasons.
Second half of last season. And remember, he was playing without
Well,
Beckham
yeah,
for the
I
whole,
mean, you can, there's mitigating circumstances. Yeah. On the other hand, you could say that without an Odell Beckham or a Plexico Burress who can catch the balls he throws 4 feet over their head, you know, he won't be that good. And they don't have a very good receiving core, right now, which is a problem for both him and Daniel Jones.
Right.
But obviously at 38, even if he's like a league average quarterback, which I'm not even convinced he is now, you don't want to be thinking we've got to stick with him for sentimental reasons.
Well,
I think you do have to stick with him for practical reasons. You don't want to throw Daniel Jones in off the deep end while there still is sentiment for Eli. Let Eli play. If he is as good as people say he is, great. It's a win. If he's not, you go to your quarterback of the future.
Well, going full circle, Mike, if Eli's 38, full circle to the top of the show, it's just a baby, right?
I call him kid.
Kid as well. Yeah. Now, the Giants have the Cowboys in their first game of the season. We're going to be previewing all of the first Sunday slate on our Friday show. Tom Deacon, a comedian in the studio with me for that one. And we'll get you set for this weekend, the first weekend of NFL action. Cracking stuff, Iron Mike. If you want to follow the big man on Twitter, at Carson Sports, and the blog, Irresistible Targets.
Yeah, Irresistible Targets. And go to patreon.com, Mike Carlson, FMTE, because I'll be picking all those games online. And starting tomorrow, of course, Green Bay and Chicago in the daddy of all games, the mother of all rivalries.
What a great game to get things underway. Yeah, we'll tweet out the link to Carlson's Patreon column as well. Get involved, subscribe to that. It is well worth it. Cracking stuff, man. We will see you same time, same place next week.
Okay, that's a deal. I like that one, and I'll be a year younger next year.
Well, it'll take me the whole week to work that one out, I'm like. Welcome back to the Nat Coombs Show with Paddy Power Fantasy. That's the new NFL fantasy game. £3.5 million to be won this weekend, gang. This is how you play. Go to Paddy Power Fantasy, choose your lineup from all of the NFL Sunday games. £3.5 million, as I say, to be won. £1 million for first place. There's no chance any of us are going to get that. £9 to enter. So £9, and you could be landing £1 million by the end of the weekend. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. So get involved with that. Go to Paddy Power Fantasy. Get stuck in. Good to have them on board. So Ben Isaacs will be dropping by in a moment. He's going to be talking through all the key college stories, some big games on ESPN Player this weekend as well. So he'll be letting us know what to look out for there. Friday, Tom Deacon, old friend of the show, comedian Tom Deacon, getting us set for the weekend's action. And of course, Saturday is our bonus fantasy special, dropping Saturday mornings into your podcatcher. We'll be dropping video as well through the ESPN channels. Ollie Giel, our resident fantasy expert, getting you set for your daily fantasy weekend. Also, I should plug my new column on ESPN. We'll tweet it out, actually. I've done a season preview, 6 things to get excited about. I'm going to be writing a column for ESPN each and every week, so we'll push that out on our social media handles at The NC Show. Right then, let's get our old friend Ben Isaacs up. Delighted to welcome now an old friend of the show and our resident college expert. You're going to be hearing from him all through the season. Ben Isaacs, how you doing? What's occurring?
I'm great. How's everyone there?
We are good, fine and dandy and geared up. Of course, I was going to say geared up for the start of the season, the start of the NFL season, but college season already well and truly underway, right?
Exactly. This is old news. You know, I've been going, college football doesn't just have week one, it has week zero. So Saturday before last, we had what they call week zero, and they played a handful of kind of showpiece games, but it really got started last Saturday, and week two is kind of this Saturday, and it is the best week two I can ever remember. It's incredible slate of games.
That is a big statement to be making 30 seconds into your show debut, Ben Isaac. So let's talk about that then, because the thing about week one, of course, and the playoff system in the NFL, the two can connect, where after 1 week of football, you can be pretty much out of the playoff picture.
Yes, totally. My Oregon lost to Auburn in week one in the biggest game of the week. And it's going to be very difficult for Oregon now to, even if they run the table, win their conference, to be able to show the selection committee that they're good enough to be in the playoffs, because the best team that they'll play this season has already beaten them.
So who are the runners and riders so far with week zero and week one? Does that mean it's 2 weeks or 1.5 weeks? What are we going?
Yeah, I guess let's go for 1.5.
1.5 weeks in the book. Who are the serious contenders? Does that mean Auburn are in the mix?
Yeah, they've moved themselves into the mix, definitely. I mean, the two main contenders, hold on to your hats, Alabama and Clemson.
You know, they've
won the last four between them. They play in the playoffs every year, it seems. So let's assume that they get in. The Big Ten, Ohio State or Michigan, I think one of those are going to get in. It feels like it could be Michigan's year, because Jim Harbaugh, since he's been coach of Michigan, has never beaten Ohio State, and Ohio State now have a new head coach. That's going to be a tough battle. Big 12, Texas and Oklahoma. Oklahoma looked amazing the other week. They've, the past two drafts, they've had the number one draft pick, and they've had the Heisman Trophy winner with Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield. And now they've got Jalen Hurts, who, in terms of how he performs in college, maybe even better than those two.
So Jalen Hurts was at Alabama and he lost the gig, right? So he's...
Yeah, he lost the gig halfway through the national championship game. Imagine being the starting quarterback for an NFL team all season and then getting yanked halfway through the Super Bowl and your replacement then just keeping the job. That's what happened to him. He came back for like one game the next season, helped him in the SEC championship, and then he transferred. He's gone to Oklahoma, where they're going to pass the ball a lot more than he did at Alabama. And people were like, well, let's see how he does when he's playing in that system. He only threw for 3 touchdowns, ran for 3 touchdowns, and that's statistically one of the greatest games an Oklahoma quarterback has ever had. And considering the past two Oklahoma quarterbacks have won the Heisman Trophy.
And he wasn't, am I right in saying, he wasn't a de facto starter. There was a quarterback controversy, right, in terms of who was going to get the starting gig there.
Yeah, he had to earn the job. I mean, he was the favorite, but he had to earn it. He had to come in and prove that, I mean, everyone knew he had the talent, but it's whether he'd be able to pick up that system, because it's so different the way that Oklahoma sling the ball around compared to the way that Alabama would pound it. Yeah. But he was amazing.
So, Benny, we're an NFL show first and foremost, of course. So Jalen Hurts sounds to me like he's going to be a top draft prospect to keep an eye on. Give us maybe the top 5 or 6 players. They don't have to all be quarterbacks. I know, obviously, the buzz is usually about them. But the top 4 or 5, 6 players that you think are going to be in the draft that our listeners are going to be seeing in the NFL making a splash next season.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very easy to go heavy on the quarterbacks. And the thing is that the next draft will be a quarterback heavy draft. If your team that you support in the NFL needs a quarterback, this is going to be your draft. Probably number one at the moment is Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback of Alabama. He's a great passer. He's a very good athlete, a fantastic leader. We're going to see a team tank for Tua. Maybe that's what the Dolphins will do. He's someone who you can build a franchise around. He's the guy who replaced Jalen Hurts in Alabama and has just been stunning.
Firstly, your pronunciation was stunning. Secondly, don't mention tanking around here when Mike's around. He gets very, very cross about that, as we found out to our cost earlier on. So Tua is, but you're right, we're going to hit tanking for Tua everywhere.
Just for the alliteration.
I see what they did there. So Tua's in the mix. Who else?
Yeah, Justin Herbert, quarterback of Oregon. He didn't have the best game in the defeat against Auburn. He was draft eligible last year, but chose to return, which I think is a great move because he's going to learn so much more. He's a big guy at 6'6". He's a good all-rounder. We'll see. It's going to be interesting to see how he does this season, whether he does take that step up, because the pressure now is, okay, you were good last year. Now you've got to be really good.
That is a really interesting point. I remember Jake Locker. Remember Jake Locker back in the day, who had a storming year in college, and everybody predicted him as a number one overall pick. If he made himself eligible, he didn't. He said another year in college. Did he get injured or something happened to him? And then, of course, bounced into lower rounds. Mediocrity was never the same again. So, yeah.
Never the same again. I mean, that's the risk that Herbert is taking, because he's got to show that he's going to improve and not plateau, because otherwise everyone will think, oh, okay, we've seen his ceiling. And it's not going to be an NFL starter. the guy who may be the most talented player in the entire draft is Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver at Alabama. He's the absolute game changer, averages nearly 20 yards a catch. Whoever drafts him is getting a huge upgrade. I think he's going to be a top five pick.
What kind of receiver is he? Calvin Ridley style? Is he?
Yes, I would. He's so quick. He's very rangy. He can catch pretty much everything. He'll make those kind of spectacular catches that you're just going to see, you know, on Twitter highlights like all season. He's beautiful to watch. If you get the chance to see any Alabama games, keep an eye out for Jerry Jeudy.
Jerry Jeudy.
On the defensive side, Chase Young, defensive end at Ohio State. He's a fantastic edge rusher. He can work in a 4-3 or 3-4. Ohio State are a 4-3 team, but he's got the skills to do everything. He's so athletic, great power. And here's one I've got to make sure I pronounce right. AJ Epenesa.
Nice.
He's a defensive end at Iowa. He plays on the right, but again, will work anywhere. Very hard worker, quick learner, absolutely terrorizes quarterbacks. Those five are my five to watch.
Love it. Okay, we'll roll those out on our social media channels at the NC show and try and find some highlight reels or clips from them as well. So you can go and check them out. Crack and work, Benny. This weekend, ESPN, of course, the home of college in the UK. So either through ESPN, through your cable provider, or ESPN Player, of course. If you haven't got ESPN Player, get involved with that. What are the big games we should be watching this weekend?
Week two this year is as good as you're going to see. If you are not familiar with college football, this is the week. You know, even if it means just getting your week trial at ESPN Player for free and just watching this week, I guarantee you'll be hooked. It starts at 5 p.m. Cincinnati at Ohio State. Cincinnati Bearcats are not in one of the big five conferences that they call the Power Five, and they are one of the best teams outside that. It's going to be a really nice test for Ohio State. They've got a new transfer quarterback, Justin Fields. He transferred from Georgia. Then at 8:30, we're going to Texas A&M at Clemson. Clemson are the national champions, of course. But this may be their toughest game of the year. Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence and running back Travis Etienne. If you've not seen these two players, this is the time. They are must-see TV. These are two Heisman candidates.
So is Etienne NFL bound, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I think so. I think he's going to be, I mean, he's not going to be like a Zeke Elliott. He's going to be the next tier, but amazing player. Yeah. 12:30 at night, LSU at Texas. Both will consider themselves playoff contenders. So in a way, this is a must win. One of these teams is going to lose and the selection committee is going to probably forget about them. But the other team is going to make a big jump. And then if you can stay awake, 3:30 a.m., Stanford at USC. It's very interesting at USC because they had a quarterback who was going to blossom into a star, TJ Daniels, injured in the first game that he played. He's out for the season. They've got a true freshman coming in. A true freshman is someone who was playing high school football last year. They haven't sat out a year to learn the system. He played high school football in Arizona. One of his coaches was Kurt Warner, played on the same team as Kurt Warner's son. So the fact that USC, they changed their offensive system. Nat, you wrote a great column last season about the way that the NFL was changing and becoming more pass happy, and how it resembled the Big 12 conference where Oklahoma and Texas play and really sling it around. There's a particular type of offense called the air raid that is hugely popular there and hugely popular in Texas and that area. USC have got an air raid offense for the first time. They're transitioning to that. Stanford are very much an old school team. So in terms of a contrast, that is going to be absolutely wonderful to watch. I don't know how I'm going to deal with all of those games in the NFL on Sunday.
I love it. So essentially 12 hours Saturday to Sunday morning. Get some kip around 5 a.m. and you'll be up 5 o'clock. Well, maybe get 4 o'clock to have a shower, make a massive sandwich, get your fridge filled with beer or the tipple of your choice, of course.
Start watching those games at 5, but I would say get the TV on at 2 to watch College Game Day.
Yeah, nice.
Because that is the best preview show, NFL or college, anywhere.
You are a company man, Ben Isaacs. You're a company man. Matthew Berry would be proud of you.
I did go on set at College Game Day, and everyone there is wonderful. And the atmosphere where they've got all the students there going absolutely crazy from about 6 a.m. in the morning is unreal. That's a way to set yourself up for the entire Saturday of incredible football.
I love it. You've certainly done that. Cracking stuff, Ben. You, of course, are part of our All-Pro lineup this season. So we're going to be hearing from you every week on college, but also on the NFL as well. And you'll be dropping by some of our other episodes too. If you want to follow Ben for all your college steers, @tweetsfromben is how you follow him on Twitter. Great to have you on, man. Great to have you as part of the team this season.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. And I look forward to talking football every goddamn week.
Superb stuff. Ben Isaacs getting us set for the weekend. Looking forward to that. I'm just trying to work out how the hell I'm going to get all that college football in and do a radio show on Sunday night. But we will find a way somehow, gang. We always do. There we go. Now, that's all she wrote for today's episode. Big thanks to Iron Mike and Ben Isaacs. Their regular Wednesday slot. So if you like him, don't want to miss them. Subscribe. You know the drill. We're back Friday with Tom Deacon. Look forward to it. We'll see you then. Bye for now.
The Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy.